on radio, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is InvestTalk, above average investing for the average investor. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, KPP Financial President, Financial Advisor Steve Peasley.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to InvestTalk. It is Thursday, September 24th, 2015. I appreciate being with us this hour. And I say us because Justin Klein is with me today.
I am. It's been a while since we did a show together.
Yeah. Well, we've been both pretty busy independently. So
swamped.
Yeah, busy.
Swamped.
This is a one-hour forum about managing money, post-recession climate that we're in, the 2008 meltdown. Remember that? I'm sure everybody did. Sort of pushed the reset button. It was a wake-up call for many investors and you that were kind of caught unprepared. So you were managing your own money through stock market or your 401k, and you know, it was difficult. A study by Fidelity Investments done a couple of years ago showed how investors changed their attitudes and behaviors after that crisis. And they have shifted from hopefully being scared to being prepared. So good can come up from the crisis that we had back then.
You can learn lessons.
Yeah. So while many of the investors, many responded to the survey saying that the financial crisis was caused by the banks or lenders, 38% said that. 38% said it was Americans who overextended themselves. 56% said now believe that is entirely their responsibility to prepare for retirement. 56%. And that means individual recognize their responsibility in this, in their own retirement.
Meaning they can't just rely on Social Security?
Yeah. Social Security or mutual funds or someone else. You're going to have to be responsible and for yourself, and people have started to see that. And what does that mean? 49% said they had to decrease their personal debt. They built up their emergency fund. 42% said they have increased their emergency funds. Yeah. 80% of these same respondents say they have a better understanding of their finances.
Well, probably because now they saw the ramifications of not having that understanding, right? Where you kind of fly blind, and like Warren Buffett always says, you know, when the tide goes out, you see who's swimming naked, and a lot of people were swimming naked, and they didn't ever experience that before. And so that's probably the lessons that they've learned.
That study also said that they were turning to financial professionals for help. Leading source for guidance was financial professionals, 30%, followed by a spouse or family member, 26%.
Well, we talk about this all the time, that the world is so globalized and our financial system is so globalized. Just look what's happening now. You know, a lot of this weakness recently has been driven by China and the events that are going on there and the slowdown there, and it's affecting global growth. And, you know, 100 years from now, 100 years ago, I mean, there wasn't that type of interconnectedness.
No, there's none. So whether you work with a professional or not, it's good to have a working knowledge of the financial world, the stock market, the economy. We try to help with that. That's what we do here on InvestTalk, try to give you a better understanding of what's going on and help you learn more. And it's a constant, a consistent process. It never stops learning more how to do this because things change.
Yeah, I would say this. You and I, we learn something new every day.
Yeah.
That's our job.
Yeah.
Is to learn something new every day.
So, anyways, let's get to answering some calls. 888-99-CHARTER is our number. You can take this question. We're going to take this question before the program started. Here's a caller that came in.
Hey, guys. It's Scott from Denver. I'm a podcast listener. I got a couple questions. First is related to where you see the bottom in this market, specifically the S&P 500. Are you guys waiting for a retest of the bottom at 1920, or do you think we're headed all the way down to 1870 again, somewhere in that range? My second question is regarding IPOs or when a company issues additional shares. I was just wondering if you could maybe give an example or walk through what happens on that day does a bank hold the shares when the market opens and that's who is selling the stock? Or who holds that stock those first moments of an IPO or when new shares are issued? Thanks for the program. Thanks for all the information. Take care.
Those are two very good questions. Yeah,
which one do you want to start with?
We'll start with where we think the bottom is, because that's just a guess. No one knows where the bottom is, but it's definitely going to retest the late August bottom.
Yeah, I think that's a certainty. It's just a matter of, is that support and how long will that support last? Mm-hmm. It will certainly support. It's just how long will that support last? And is that the ultimate bottom? And I think nobody knows where exactly this market is going exactly to the downside, to the exact number. But you'll know from the internals. Well, Steve and I will have a good idea if we're near the bottom or not. We're never going to pick the exact bottom, but we'll see things improving, internals improving. Just like earlier this year, we saw the internals deteriorating. There you go. Yeah. In the market. So and we didn't know it was going to be late August that the market was really going to break down. But I think we had a good idea that it was going to be sometime in the middle part of the year.
Sometime the summer was a good guess, and we talked about it. We said it would be. But see, again, we don't know.
Yeah.
We just said that's probably a good guess, a good probability. Mm-hmm. Are we at the bottom? I don't want to say that. I can't say that. We'd be just guessing.
Nothing is telling us that we're near bottom.
No.
Nothing, and the credit markets are improving. In fact, they're actually deteriorating even more. So nothing internally is saying, okay, we're really close to a bottom.
We're
in a downtrend, and until that downtrend is over, you don't know when the bottom is.
That's right. Now, your IPO question, which is very good. The question, IPO, initial public offering, that's when a company initially goes public. Who owns those shares initially? Now, remember, an IPO, a company is associated with a financial institution who's taken it public. Mm-hmm. That financial institution, when I say supports them, means they own the shares. But before they go public, they call their best clients and ask them if they would like shares. If they don't sell all those shares, that means that financial institution is holding those shares.
Mm-hmm. And they go to their clients that aren't their best clients, still have money. And so usually that's an investment bank is what takes the company public. And that, remember, and even he even asked about companies that are already on the marketplace and are issuing more shares. Well, they also do the same thing. But they pre-sell them. They sold them to, like Steve said, their clients beforehand, whether that could be mutual funds, it could be it's usually big institutions.
It could be a lot of times it's pension funds.
Mm-hmm. Pension funds, there you go.
State pension funds.
Yeah.
They call them up, say, hey, how many shares of this hot IPO? Or, hey, how many shares of this additional offering of shares do you want?
Yeah. And the reason they go to those institutions is because they're institutions. They have a lot of money. And you make
five calls, ten calls.
Yeah.
You're done.
You can allot that, millions, if not billions of dollars in shares. Or it happens on bonds as well, when companies are trying to, issue bonds.
That's why I tell you, if you're an individual investor and you get a phone call from your trading house or whoever you're using, mm-hmm. and they want to sell you an IPO, that means they couldn't sell it to the big boys because it probably wasn't good enough.
Mm-hmm. So the big boys,
very careful,
they're usually
that.
Pretty smart because they're allocating a lot of money, just like we are when we buy investments for our clients. We're investing for all our clients in that particular strategy. So, and the same way with other big institutions, even bigger than us.
Why should you start with mutual funds? That's going to be one of our main talking points today. Hopefully we'll get to it. But first, let's take a quick look at the market. I also have a couple other points I want to make. The new home sales are out today. Existing home sales are out. I want to talk about that. What's healthcare sector stocks? I want to talk about that. And maybe should the Fed stop dithering and take action? Talk about that as well. Those are going to be some of our main talking points today. But first, let's take a quick look at the market. The market was down. The Dow was down 79. The NASDAQ was down 19 points. The S&P down 18. So this has been several days, 4 days, 5 days, four of the last 5 days. The market's down. Looks like it's going down to retest. And remember, the market fell sharply over 4 days in August after being weak since May 21st. So don't think it was strong before that. It was not. No. It just fell sharply in 4 days in August. And then now it came up. Now it's coming back down.
You had a counter trend rally.
Right.
And there's always, in every trend, there's always counter trend moves. In a bull market, there's counter trend, you know, pullbacks. And you had a lot of those over the past few years. Nothing major, nothing like this.
No.
And the big question is, can we regain that positive trend that we've had for the past 5 or 6 years? And so far, we haven't yet.
No, we haven't. And it looks like we're heading back down to retest the lows that we had in August. And that may be, by the way, a correction is health restoring. Are we in a correction? This is the big question between Justin and I. Are we in a correction, or is this the first leg of a bear market? That's really, we don't know. Don't think we know. We have suspicions. We have theories. But you know what? You just, all you can do as an investor is observe.
Observe and read and That's know right. how to read it, read the market.
If it's time to review your retirement portfolio, I'm glad to help. I'm happy to meet with a limited number of listeners. It's good to get a second opinion, everybody. No matter whether you work on your own or you're considering using a professional like us, it is a good idea. I will be in San Ramon for September 30th meetings. If you'd like to schedule a retirement portfolio review with me, just go to investtalk.com, click on schedule a meeting, and a listener line is always open at 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Steve. This is Sushit calling from San Jose. What do you think about 3D printing stocks? I think I have heard how the market is moving away from high-tech growth to more value stocks. For the long term, what are your thoughts about 3D printing stocks and 3D printing sector, especially 3D systems and strategies? Thanks. Bye.
Why don't you go ahead, Jeff?
Well, yeah, we all know that 3D printing technology is a pretty new technology, and it's really catching on in the industrial space to create all types of things, especially prototypes.
The technology,
The technology is catching on. And sales are growing pretty rapidly for companies like 3D Systems and Stratasys, etc. The problem is that what's the differentiating factor? Right, it's just like any business, no matter what it is. One company, to be successful and survive and be the leader in that industry, needs to have something special and proprietary, right? You think of Apple and its and the way it designs phones and products, and Google and its search engine algorithm, and how everybody goes to Google, that type of thing, and that's why they're so big. And the problem with 3D Systems and Stratasys is, and the whole sector is, who's the leader? There's no clear leader at this time. And until there is, you're going to still continue to see downward pressure on margins. And that's why 3D Systems last quarter, earnings fell 81%, even though sales grew 13%.
And just like any other high growth, high tech, new technology, everybody gets excited about it, overprices the stocks. Mm-hmm. I remember people calling us thinking, oh, 3D Systems, we need to buy it. Look at how good. And we always were saying, well, it's way overvalued. And now that it's way down from what it was, $95 now down to, you know, $12, everybody's thinking, oh, it's a bargain. Well, is it a bargain? What's the growth rate? It's just like every other company. What's the growth rate? What's the sales? You got to go back to fundamentals. And it's still not cheap.
Exactly. I would stay away until you see some shakeout in the industry.
Yeah. I'm registered investment advisor Steve Peasley with Justin Klein today. Today, our main talking point is aimed at newcomers to investing. It really, really doesn't matter whether you're a beginner or experienced investor. We all need to make room for learning. We all do. This is InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Thanks again for subscribing to our podcast. Whether it's how much they contribute, the investment choices, or just plain mismanagement. Three things you should never do with a 401k. That's our talking point for Friday's podcast.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Okay, our main talking about is about mutual funds. I know it can't get much boring than that, right? Really can't. How mutual funds can help you start investing. And it's really, you know, mutual funds are a good, solid way for years and years and years to invest. You get instant diversification. There's good, you can buy mutual funds with the strongest managers. And before the advent of ETFs or a massive amount of ETFs, it was one of the ways that most people got started instead of individual stocks. But what is a mutual fund? It's just a company that holds your money. You're buying in a pool and then go invest it.
Yeah, you're investing with all the other investors in that particular pool. And a lot of people, and I hear this in ETFs as well, they think, oh, well, are ETFs a good buy? Well, it's the same thing with mutual. There's all types of mutual funds. There's all types of ETFs that invest in all types of different asset classes. So when you're talking about are they good, yeah, they're good investment vehicles. That's what they are. They're just investment vehicles and to invest in certain assets.
And you still have to decide what those assets are should be at whatever time or the environment that we're in.
Yeah, and all the funds in that particular asset class are going to move in a similar direction. For example, in 2008, if you were in a mutual fund that invested in equities, the odds of you being down for the year are extremely high.
Probably 100%.
Pretty much 100%.
No matter what mutual fund class.
So does that mean that every one of those mutual funds is bad because it was debt? No. That they were invested in an asset class that was poor, and that exact opposite happened, you know, between that 2009 and, you know, early part of this year is they tended to go up. It's just a matter of how did they do compared to the other mutual funds that are also investing in similar types of assets.
Yeah.
You have to compare them to their peers.
Remember, there's big caps, big companies, small companies, medium-sized companies, growth companies, value companies, sector funds, and very specific sector. All these are mutual funds. And it
foreign,
goes on and on.
Foreign stocks, you know, mutual funds that only invest in stores.
Emerging markets.
Emerging. There's mutual funds that invest in all types of assets. They invest in bonds and commodities and foreign stocks, domestic stocks, large, mid, and small. There's ones that go everywhere.
Yeah.
So you have to, there's so many different flavors of them, and you just have to understand what flavor works best for you in your portfolio.
And you can keep it simple. You can buy a mutual fund in an S&P 500 index.
Yeah.
Okay. That makes it very simple.
Just you know exactly what you're doing. If the S&P goes up 1%, odds are that index fund is going to go up 1% and vice versa.
Yeah, and it'll go down.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
And we're right now, this whole year, the whole year has been a pretty weak stock market. It's something that we haven't seen since 2008. A whole year of weakness. Mm-hmm. We haven't seen it.
And we haven't had, haven't we had this year from the Fed?
A QE.
QE.
Yep.
And
quantitative
easing. Every year between 2009 and 2014, we had QE.
So will the Fed start up another QE? I guarantee you that they will if they see the economy start to weaken.
I'm hearing some whispers from some institutions that they think it's going to happen next year, QE4.
I don't think so, but, of course, that's just everybody giving a guess.
I heard from my guy Goldman that it's December, but I don't buy that.
December?
No. I don't buy that,
Let's go to Jennifer in San Jose. How you doing, Jennifer?
I'm doing fine. Thanks for taking my call, Steve.
Thank you.
I have two questions. Mm-hmm. First of all, I would like to know, from your perspective, do you think the market is going to take a dip pretty soon?
I think
The second question is...
Go ahead.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
The second question is, if the market tanks, is it a better strategy to sell all my positions right now, or should I keep my positions but sell covered calls?
Okay, those are good questions. Do I think the market is going down or tanking? I think, as we said at the top of the show, I think it's going to retest the lows. That would not be surprising, and that would be normal, and that's a probability. I don't know for sure, but it's a probability. Now, will it go below those recent lows? I think it's a 50-50 proposition that it will?
I would say that it's higher than 50-50.
So let's say it does. Now, the second part of your question is, so the answer is yes. I think it's going to go down lower before we get a rally or maybe a rally to the end of the year.
I think the easy answer to your second question, Jennifer, is can you handle the potential volatility of the market going down another 20%?
Now,
can you handle that, Jennifer? I think that's the question.
That is a very good, what is your long-term feeling about that? For us, KPP Financial and our stock managed accounts, we already are in a lot of cash. We already hedged ourselves. So doing a covered call is a type of hedge, and I see nothing wrong with that. I think that might be a good idea. This is the best stock. I want to thank thanks for investing this hour with us. Thank you, everybody. We do appreciate being with us. How much money do you need to save as an emergency fund? How much? We're going to talk about that next half hour. You're listening to Invest Talk. That's going to be on Invest Talk Personal. 888-99-CHARTER is our number, so give us a call.
Part of the Invest Talk experience is visiting our website, investtalk.com. And one of the reasons for a visit is Steve's market commentary. Just go to investtalk.com and scroll down to his market commentary.
Chart 888-992-4278. Today we have the new home sales report out, and it was up sharply, better than expected, a 7-year high at 552,000 new homes sold in August. They expected 515. And even July was revised up from 507,000 to 522. Now, that is 21.6% higher year over year. Now, I have a really interesting question. 60% of there was a quote out there that I read that it was about 60% of what it should be based on our population. So even though these numbers are pretty high, they're not they're not that high. Don't think that this is just a wonderful thing. And another thing I think you should think about is there are shortages, especially on the West Coast, but if the housing market, and by the way, the housing market the housing industry is really helping our economy, right? We know that. Before a few years ago, they weren't helping at all. Now they are like the leading our economy. But if it was so good, why are the lumber prices falling? Why are they at the lowest in 4 years? Is it all because of all the commodity industry falling? But if our housing is so good, why are lumber prices falling to 4 years? Lows.
Well, maybe it's because of China and less use of lumber there.
Why aren't the builder stocks here in the U.S. rising into new highs? They fell just like the rest of the market.
Yeah.
Lumber prices are
actually
low.
Actually, I think they were worse than the market today.
Yeah. Why? If the lumber prices are so low and the building and new home sales were so high, if it was so good, why aren't builders doing much better? Builder stocks. See, something's not right here. I don't pretend to know the answer. I'm asking questions, and this is what I do. I ask questions to myself as to what is wrong with this picture. What's wrong with this picture?
Well, we also don't have a lot of new home buyers. The new home buyers still remain lower than average.
Yes.
And that's a lot of that has to do with student loan debt and I was reading a figure. Did you know that student loan debt, total student loan debt held by the government, is up 660% since 2007?
No, I didn't, but I think it's a big problem.
Yeah.
I don't know how that problem. I think what it's doing is obvious. What it's doing, it's retarding the entry of millennials into the housing market.
Yeah, because they get out of college they're earlier in their career and they're probably not making that much. Maybe $40,000 to $60,000.
That's right. And they got a loan they got to pay.
And it's 20 years ago they didn't have this student debt, so they could go out and buy a home. And now they have $1,000-$1,500 a month they have to spend to support their student debt.
So are you saying you support not giving student loans out?
Yes, it's driven by government.
It kind of reminds me of the housing bubble.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, where,
because they're giving loans to anybody who wants to go to school.
Every Tom, Dick, and Harry, exactly.
Yeah, anybody who wants to go to school.
Oh, you want to get a loan here, and you want to get a history degree that's pretty much worthless? Here, I'll give you $100,000. Yep. Why would you do that? Yeah.
$100,000, that's getting off cheap. You know,
now,
much, you know,
if you're going to get an engineering degree, here's a couple $100,000, because I'm sure you're going to get a good job.
But that's the problem, is the engineering degree costs just as much as the history degree.
I know, and they don't do that. They don't differentiate quality from inequality, just like the housing problem. You know, quality lender to a bad lender, just the same issue.
Yeah.
But, you know, you're going to get the argument that, you know, every student should get a loan. Well, depends on
what's causing the tuition problem.
Yeah. Let's get back to phone. So your question comes first, as always, 888-99-CHART. Here's a question that came in earlier.
I'm Peter from Hercules, California, and I just found out your station. I was just shuffling through my radio station, and I just found out that you guys are talking about stocks. I'm a beginner. I just got into the stock market. So I would I need some tips on, like, how much to start with, because I'm 28 only. So I'm going to start around, like, maybe $1,000. So I need a beginner's tip. So what should I look at? Look for, like, stocks, or should I invest in ETF or mutual funds? Okay, thank you.
As a beginner, you should stay away from stocks, because there takes a lot of work and understanding. And you have to start simple. And probably an ETF of an index would be a good, and buy a little bit every couple weeks or every month. And just dollar cost average, and start reading, start learning.
And I would start also with mutual funds or ETFs that don't have commissions.
Right.
You want to avoid commissions. And we say this all the time, if you have less than really, you know.
He has $1,000.
Yeah, he has $1,000. So he's not anywhere close to a point where he can afford to be paying commissions.
Right.
And so there are a ton of mutual funds out there, no load, no transaction fee mutual funds that you can invest in. And like we said earlier, across all different asset classes, all different types of flavors. And so learn about what those flavors are, meaning what are the different asset classes that are out there? Bonds, stocks, commodities, alternatives, et cetera. And then all the different subsets within those asset classes. So and know the risks involved, which ones have higher, which ones have lower. Like a large cap stocks are going to have less risk than small cap stocks, for example.
So maybe you should start with Vanguard, which is a very good fund family, very low expense ratio, and they don't charge commissions. And buy an S&P 500 or NASDAQ 100.
Or find a brokerage firm that offers a lot of no commission ETFs. Yeah. Meaning you don't have to, doesn't cost you anything to buy or sell an ETF.
Let's go to Art Menlo Park. He wants to talk about Vanguard funds. How you doing, Art?
Good, Steve. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
I just wanted to get your opinion on one of the funds in the Vanguard family, the Wellington Fund.
Okay.
I was actually thinking about putting about 10% of my 401k into it, and I just wanted to wait until the market came down, but I just wanted to find out what your thoughts on the Wellington Fund, because I understand it's a balanced type of a fund.
Well, Wellington is one of the largest mutual funds out there. It's in Vanguard, the Vanguard family, and Vanguard is a low-cost mutual fund family. So there's nothing wrong with Wellington at all, but just know that you're going to be in a huge fund that, you know, will move slowly any direction, up and down. It's going to go where the market goes. I don't know exactly what's in the Wellington Fund. It is a very high-rated fund by Morningstar. Is it a balanced fund, Justin? Or is it?
It is right now. It's in 57% stocks, 33% bonds, 7% non-U.S. stocks. So yeah,
it wouldn't be something I would like. It wouldn't be something I would do, because I don't like that bond exposure.
Yeah, the fees are very low. 0.18% is the expense ratio. Super low. Good risk reward. Long term, it'll be fine. But you know, it doesn't. If we go into a bear market, it certainly can go down a lot, just like it did in 2008.
Okay, thanks, Art. Appreciate it.
So don't think it's without risks.
Yeah, thank you, Art. Appreciate it. Thank you. Let's go to James in Santa Clara. How you doing, James?
Very good. Thanks a lot, you guys. Taking my call.
Thank you.
I have a question. You got the DWX at. I have some money that I want to put away for a while, and I would just like to. Do you think the dividends are safe with its ETF? I think the research has a very low cost ratio, and they look really good. I mean, I don't see anything wrong with it. I just want to ask your opinion.
Answer your first question: is the dividend safe? Well, it's an S&P. It's an ETF, exchange-traded fund, seeking to replicate the performance of the S&P International Dividend Opportunities Index. So the dividend, it always will have a dividend. Now, will a dividend be 6% as it's advertising right now? That's what it is. I can't say that. That seems pretty high. But I will say this, the dividend will probably always be there and probably pretty decent because that's what it tracks. It's an index that tracks dividend-paying stocks.
And it's pretty well diversified. And so the biggest holding is an Australian metals group. You've probably never heard of, about 3.75% of the portfolio, and then it goes down in percentage from there. And so it has a lot of different holdings. But if the underlying companies in this index start to cut their dividends, then you could see the dividend be cut some, but I don't think it's going to be dramatic.
Yeah, you can't use the word guaranteed or anything, but safe you probably can say is pretty safe.
But the ETF could continue to go down.
Yeah, the value of the ETF could go down.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's still bearish. There's nothing bullish about the chart at this point. So right now it's at 34. Its high was 64 back in 2011. So it's had a pretty big drop ever since then. So don't think it's without the risk in that sense, that if we go into a bear market, it will probably continue to go down.
That's right. And the dividend yield will go up as it goes down. Because remember, the dividend is in dollars.
But it won't go up to him because he bought it here.
That's right. If you buy it now, it won't go up to you. But the yield, people are going to look at it and say, oh, look at that. If this is DWX, everybody, is a symbol, the SPDR, S&P International Dividend Payer. If the value goes in half, that means, because dividends are paid in dollars, okay, they're not paid in percent. But as a percentage of the price of the ETF, it will go up. You, if you bought it now, wouldn't go up, because you bought it at a higher price. So your dividend is a yield is whatever you bought at the price that the ETF at.
So understand, this is a fairly high risk dividend play. Not the highest, but it's above average, I would say.
If the dollar goes down in value, it's been gone up for the last year or so, you think it's going to go up?
It would help. It would help this. Doesn't necessarily mean it would go up, but it would help it because the companies that it's invested in are foreign companies that most of their business is probably done in foreign currencies, and therefore the value of those currencies would go up if the dollar weakened, right? Because they're in relation to each other, and therefore, yes, it would be a tailwind to the companies inside this index. But that doesn't preclude it from also going down if we go into, global recession.
Yeah. Okay. I hope that helps, James. It's a good
ETF.
Thank
you so much, guys.
Thank you. It's a good ETF for dividends. Let's put it that way. But don't think it will stay. Look at the range. Okay. In 2009, the range was 23 to 57. In 2008, it was 27 to 77. And last year, it was 41 to 52, more narrow range. And today, it's at 34. So look how far it's fallen.
It's a high-risk dividend play, but if you're looking long-term, I think this is a fairly good place to pick it up if you can handle the volatility.
Now, Henning sent us a tweet, and he wanted us to look up RTN. Henning, if it's the Henning I know, he is from the Ukraine. So he tweeted us. RTN is Raytheon Company, manufactures guidance systems, laser missile systems, integrated defense platforms, and command and control system. It is a $32 billion company. Not much growth. If you go back a year, the sales were falling. This year, they've been erratic, up or down within 4 to 5%, up or down a quarter over a quarter, last four quarters. making good money. Make $6.66 this year. That's up 4%. $7.05 next year. That's up 6%. But
you're not going to get great returns out of this.
Yeah,
it's fairly safe. The biggest risk for me is our government budget. We spend a lot of money on military. It's a big part of our budget. We outspend the world by, I think, the next biggest is China, which is we spend 8 times what they spend. So we spend a lot of money on military. And what if we get into a fiscal fight and, you know, they start to cut back on military spending? Now, then Raytheon could get hit.
It's all politics on that when it comes to that. Are we going to get a Republican president next time or a Democrat? Republicans usually spend more money on military, on defense, than Democrats. So, and then, of course, you got
geopolitical deficit spending
issue. Are they going to be able to?
And what about deficit? What about geopolitical problems? Yeah. You know, with Russia and you know the Middle East and North Korea. Do those problems flare up and we maybe start another war somewhere?
ISIS comes to mind. Are we going to spend more money fighting them, and then they're going to spend more money on this? Raytheon will do well. It's a tough question.
Yeah. So there's negative risks and positive risks to this company.
Okay, it's getting close to InvestTalk Personal, but I don't know if we have enough time. The day-to-day money choices we make that have lasting impact, we don't have a lot of time to get into it, but you know, the topic here, we're going to get to it probably after the break. Just so you know, I was looking at some stats today and wanted to know what sectors were doing well and what sectors were doing poorly this year. The healthcare sector stocks had the strongest earnings growth, but they didn't do the best this year. That was consumer discretion. Now, they also have, the consumer discretion are up about 4% for the year. Healthcare stocks are up about 2% for the year. But what's interesting is consumer discretion earnings were growing about 10%, whereas the healthcare sector was 14.7% growth. So I'm just wondering.
Well, we talk about this time. Just growth in and of itself isn't the only factor. There's multiple factors that affect performance of stocks in individual sectors. So don't think that the growth is just going to be the primary driver.
No, but it just is good to know what sectors were doing well this year. Doesn't mean they'll do well going into the next
one. Well, recently the healthcare sector has been hit because of biotech.
That's
Biotech's not doing well.
If you have a question you want answered right now, we're here for you. 888-99-CHART is how to reach us right now. We're going to talk to Sean in New York. Then there's room for your question after that.
Our podcast distribution is made possible each day by KPP Financial, Steve Peasley, President. If you've wondered just what a portfolio checkup is all about, whether you do it yourself or ask Steve for help, it's a necessary exercise that should happen at least once a year. Today, after our regular podcast, if you'd like to continue listening, Steve will describe briefly the various elements of the process. That's right after today's regular podcast.
We're going to go talk to Sean, listening to us in New York. He's a podcaster. How you doing, Sean?
I'm doing good. How are you guys doing?
Good. Where are you in New York?
I actually live in Riverdale, in Bronx.
Okay. No, well, I worked in my first few years out of college. I was working in Manhattan, so I know the area pretty good.
Excellent. So I have a question regarding, I think this is the first time that I'm hearing from you guys that there's a possibility for a bear market or going down 20%.
Yes.
I'm just curious to know why you guys think that way. Is there anything in terms of economical perspective that are we similar to where we were in 2009 or 2008? Why do you guys think that there's a possibility for that?
Well, we're not going to have a financial crisis like we had 2008, 2009. That's not what's happening. I think what we're seeing, for me, and Justin's going to answer this question too. We'll answer it separately. But for me, one of the reasons why is because the whole world economically is starting to is in a recession. The only person, the only country in the world that is really doing decently is the United States. So my big fear is China going to slow down more, and is Europe going to fall back into recession? And both of those are really trying to stimulate and they probably will succeed at some point. But we're way overdue. Our stock market is overpriced. We're way overdue for a correction, a normal correction, which is between 10 and 20%. And are we peaking economically? Are we at a peak?
And that segues right into a couple of my main points of why I do think we are entering a bear market is because, A, while the economic numbers aren't terrible, they're not. They're kind of mixed. The vector of the numbers are now down. And I compare it a lot to like a high-flying growth stock where, you know, the growth is 100% and year over year and everything's looking good, and all of a sudden that starts to slow and the air out of that inflation, that bubble, starts to deflate. And that's kind of what's happening now, is our economy is starting to deflate slowly. And the only thing we haven't had is really the stock market roll over as an indicator. And now we have. And we've had also the biggest thing is the credit markets. Credit markets drive our global economy, drive economic activity, because people need credit to buy homes, finance projects, businesses, etc. And the credit markets have been deteriorating really ever since the end of last year. And they're not getting better. You know, we have little small rallies here and there, but the trend is clearly down, strongly down, and there's nothing that's telling me that that's changing. So as long as the credit markets remain weak, I think the equity markets stay weak. And there has to be something to change the vector of our economy and also the vector of the credit markets.
Now, Sean, we don't know. Remember, everything looks the best at the top of something, mm-hmm. okay? And we're not sure we're at the top of something, but it seems like we're not doing that great and the rest of the world's not doing that great. And we are way overdue for a market correction that's normal, and it looks like we're in one right now. Now we don't know if we're going to go into a bear market, which would be 20% or more in the fall of stock market. But we certainly are getting kind of long in the tooth of this economic recovery, even though the economic recovery wasn't as strong as we would like.
Well, I think we've been long in the tooth for a couple of years now. It's just a matter of when were the credit markets going to roll over? And the credit markets really, like I said, rolled over last year. And really because no QE. Lack of QE has really slowed the credit market.
But again, we don't know if we're in a bear market. We think this is a possible start of one. Mm-hmm. But you can only know that in hindsight. You know, you can't predict these things very well. But you can look for signs of deterioration. Like I just talked about earlier, why are not the builder stocks doing much, much better? Because we have a bunch of new
And the biggest problem here is the dollar's too strong. Dollar is wreaking havoc on our industrial space and creating deflation.
Causing problems overseas,
yeah,
too.
And causing problems overseas and in China and emerging markets. So there's a lot of issues that the dollar is causing.
Thanks, Sean. We appreciate your call. Thank you for listening out there in podcasting New York. Before we close for the hour, check out our balanced income program, Steady Income for Those Who Can't Stand Too Much Risk. It's income-focused with moderate volatility and value-oriented diversification. To find out more, check on the investment tab on investtalk.com. I'm Registered Investment Advisor Steve Peasley, along with Justin Klein today. And for everybody at KPP Financial, thank you for listening, and do it again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.
thanks for listening to our podcast. As we mentioned a few minutes ago, if you're interested in the portfolio review process, Steve is ready to give you a brief outline of how he approaches this free service for our podcast listeners who may be anywhere in the country. The first step was to gather your documents and send them to Steve. The second step in the process is asking questions, and these are questions you ask yourself, things to think about before your meeting with Steve.
As you approach retirement, you need to ask yourself some questions, some basic questions on your future life in retirement. For instance, do you want to retire? And if you want to retire, when and where do you want to retire? How much income do you need in retirement? How much debt do you want to carry in retirement? In other words, how much can you afford in retirement? Should you have any debt? And finally, do you have enough money saved for retirement for however long it takes before you pass away? Those are some basic questions you need to answer, and answer, you know, honestly, and ask yourself those questions and be very honest about it with yourself.
So again, step one is simply schedule the meeting, then gather your documents, and then spend some time thinking honestly about your expectations, what you want your retirement to be like. But there are other things you can do to prepare too. If you'd like to learn more about the process, listen after the next podcast, and Steve will tell you more about these review meetings.